Hello, and welcome back to the Leadership Loop podcast. I just finished a conversation with Joe Whitwer, founding pastor of Life Center, and he led Life Center for 43 years. That's a really long time to lead an organization and to lead it successfully. And so today we had a conversation about the keys to lasting leadership. And there were several things that I just think are gold that you're going to want to hear. I hope that you enjoy the podcast. I also hope that you like and subscribe because we've got more great guests coming up soon. Here's the conversation that I had with Joe today. If you could look a weary and worn out leader in the eye right now, what would you tell them?
Oh, boy. Well, it would probably vary from leader to leader, you know. But I think I would start by asking some questions. Why are you so tired? Why are you burned out? And then go from there. So obviously the issue comes back to self-care. And self-care is a multifaceted animal. There, I can think of at least six different things.
What are they?
Oh, I was hoping you'd ask. I'll list them and then we can talk about any of them you want. There's a spiritual component, a physical component, emotional, social, mental, and personal. And failure to care for yourself in any one of those ways can lead to weariness and burnout. And so I think it's a, you know, if a person wants to stay healthy and be a leader for the long run, it's wise to be aware of all of those things and do regular checkups. How am I doing in each of these areas?
Okay. Yeah. So let's say someone is feeling emotionally drained. They mentally are, there's a lot of toxic thoughts in their heads, negative thoughts.
Yeah.
What would you tell them? How would you help them get out of that hole?
Ooh. Well, emotional self-care has a lot to do with what fills you and what drains you. And typically when someone is really low emotionally, I mean, and again, we're not talking now about a clinical depression that needs to be treated, but just somebody that's really struggling with low emotional energy. I think you identify what fills you up and you identify what drains you. And if you need to get refilled, you step away from the things that drain you and step into the things that fill you up. And then I think, so that'd be one component of the emotional side of it. And then the other side is, has to do just with emotional health. And that is really, multifaceted because that plays into our relationships, the self-talk that you mentioned, you know, all of that. So again, if I was going to talk to someone about this, I would just start by asking a whole bunch of diagnostic questions. You know, how are you doing with this, with this, with this? What drains you? What fills you? Tell me about your schedule. I mean, all those kinds of things.
Okay, so can you give us an example of a time you were emotionally drained, emotionally low, and what you did to step away from the draining things and what you did to step into things that fill you up?
So, all right, so this is a story from about 6 years in. And I was wrestling with feeling inadequate, feeling like a failure, feeling like I wasn't very good at what I did. And I would come home from church on Sunday, and I describe it as the never enough syndrome. You know, no matter how many people were there, it was never enough. No matter how good the offering was, it was never enough. No matter how many people said yes to Jesus, it was never enough. And I would come home so discouraged and down, I would get the Sunday paper, go down into our basement and go straight to the classifieds and page through the jobs and say, there's got to be something I'm good at because I'm not good at this. Sadly, I couldn't find anything. It was even more discouraging. The reality was, while I'm doing all that, I knew that I was called to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, this was, I'm living out the call that God had given me. I knew that. The Apostle Paul talks about that in 1 Corinthians 9, you know, and he says, I'm compelled to preach the gospel. Woe to me if I don't preach the gospel. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt, was anytime I tried to get away from it, I felt like, no, I'm constrained here by my relationship with Jesus. This is who he made me to be, what he called me to do. So that, but that made it hard, because here I am feeling like I'm not good. And I'm not doing well. A real turning point came for me one day, just in my devotions one morning when I'm reading the Bible. And I read the story in Luke 14 of Jesus in the synagogue, and a man had a withered hand, crippled hand, and the Pharisees were watching to see if Jesus would heal him on the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. I love this about Jesus. He called the man forward and actually, I mean, brought the issue right to front and center.
Yeah.
If it had been me, I like to avoid conflict.
Me too.
I would have told the guy, hey, meet me out back right after synagogue's over, you know, and I'll take care of you. But Jesus brought him up front and then challenged the Pharisees and said, is it right to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? And he healed the man. And the Pharisees went out and teamed up with the Herodians, who were their political enemies. Mm-hmm. But now they had a common enemy in Jesus, and they wanted to kill him. I read that story, and I wanted to write something in my journal just as a point of accountability, you know, that I'd spent some time with the Lord that day, and I had no idea what to write. So I thought about it for a moment, and I wrote this down. I said, the difference between Jesus and the Pharisees is that Jesus had a personal agenda, and the Pharisees had an institutional agenda. The Pharisees cared about their institutions. They cared about the law, the Sabbath, the temple, the synagogue, but they didn't give a fig about this poor guy and his problem. He was just a test case to them. But Jesus actually cared about that man personally. And so I wrote that down in my journal, and I set my pen down and began to pray, and I felt like the Lord said, you are more like the Pharisees than you are like Jesus. Mm-hmm. That is a shocking thing to hear, you know? It really stunned me. And I asked the Lord how, and I, for the next 2 hours, I just sat and thought, and I wrote in my journal one thing after another, after another, after another, where I realized I was busy trying to build a church, an institution, rather than build big people. And I just, like I said, I saw a dozen different ways that was reflected. I would look out on Sunday morning. I could always tell who was new because, you know, it's a small, little bitty church, and you could tell who's a regular and who's not. I always go introduce myself to the new people. And if it turned out they're just visiting for the weekend from out of town, it was amazing how quickly I lost interest in them, because they're not going to stick around and help me build this thing, right? And just a whole bunch of things like that where I realized I really didn't care about the individual. I was more like the Pharisees and just cared about the institution. I did some big time repenting. And it was really interesting because I felt, when I did that and I repented, I felt that heaviness that I'd been carrying for a couple years. I felt that lift, you know, off my back. And so that was a case where the mental and the emotional were connected, that what I was thinking and telling myself was creating this, I called it a low-grade chronic depression.
Yeah.
So it wasn't acute. I was happy most of the time.
Yeah.
But just when I went there in my head, I just got discouraged.
Yeah.
Got low.
So here's what I'm hearing you say. First, your relationship with Jesus was foundational for you coming out of that negative energy, that negative thinking.
Yeah.
So I think that's key.
Yep.
Second, I hear you talking about self-leadership, that you've got to make sure you're taking care of yourself, and that if you are feeling this way, you need to make some adjustments.
Yes.
You need to be aware of how you're feeling, how you're thinking.
That's, by the way, a big part of emotional health is just emotional awareness, to be able to identify what you're feeling and why you're feeling it. And a lot of us are not good at that, that we tamp our emotions down, gloss over them, overlook them. And, you know, when something happens and you got that little twinge, stop and ask yourself, what's that thing I'm feeling right now?
Yeah.
And where's that coming from?
Yeah.
Yeah. That emotional self-awareness is huge.
That's really powerful. So the third thing I hear you saying in this story is you redefined your goal. You redefined what success was.
Yes.
It was no longer building a big institution, which has some really ties in your own self-image.
Very much, which
I understand. I think everyone has those things. Mm-hmm. But then it became about helping people, making big people, as you said. Yeah. And I think that's so important. Whatever industry you're in, if you're a leader, your goal is to help people. That's what you do. You help people get from point A to point B. And if you're about building something other than people, you're going to go in the wrong direction. And I think you're going to have those negative emotions and negative thinkings that come because of it. So those three things I think are really key from that story and helpful for me because I know it's easy to get down on myself. It's easy to have the wrong goal. And so your story is really helpful for me. And I think will be helpful for a lot of people.
Thank you.
Here's a question.
I was just going to say too, that if you're leading an organization, you typically do have organizational goals and metrics that you have to pay attention to. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But it's when those take precedence over the people, that's when you end up with a problem. So it's not wrong to want an organization to thrive and succeed.
Right.
But if you think you're going to achieve that by sacrificing people, then you're barking up the wrong tree.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good word. So how did you keep yourself, over 43 years of ministry, how did you keep yourself from burning out?
Well, again, that goes back to the self-care. And if I run through those things real quickly, on the spiritual side of things, first, I kept a current relationship with Jesus. And my devotional life, if you will, I mean, that daily time with God has been a practice that dates all the way back to college for me. And I've kept that current. I've not been perfect in it. But I've been very, very consistent. Yeah. And it's in those moments that God has often met me, corrected me, recalibrated me. Mm-hmm. So that's been a really important thing. And then also spiritually, I mean, that's not the only spiritual discipline I practice. I would say there's a social component because we're spiritual/social creatures, right? Yeah. And a great deal of our spiritual formation happens in community. Yep. And I've been very blessed. In fact, I should say that right off the top that I have enjoyed unusual longevity in part because I've been surrounded by great people. Mm. Great people who have supported me, helped me, encouraged me, challenged me, pushed me, called me out when necessary. So there's that spiritual component. There's a physical component. I've tried to take good care of myself, and that's if you want to do something and do it well for a long time, that requires a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And the physical energy is a big part of that. Yeah. So I tell people all the time, I mean, it's the basic stuff, right? Get enough sleep, eat a good diet, and get some exercise. Yep. Take care of yourself.
Yeah. So you've done that in different ways. I know you ran a lot of your life.
Yeah.
I know you do yoga. You call it yoga.
Yes.
It makes me think of LeBron James is 37, 38 years old, and still one of the best players in the NBA because he takes care of his body.
Yes.
It's that self-care, that physical care. And I think that's for any role you're in, your body matters. It's how you get around.
Huge.
It's how you think. And if you don't take care of it, it's going to slow you down.
Yeah. And failure to pay attention to that costs you. Mm-hmm. And it's going to cost you, like I said, at the very least on the energy level, if not a lot of other things.
Yeah. So you got spiritual, physical, what else? How do you keep from burning out?
Social, have friends.
Yeah.
You know, and it's amazing how many leaders it's called the lonely leader syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll hear people say it's lonely at the top. It doesn't have to be. Have some friends. Mm-hmm. So the spiritual, the physical, the social, have friends, the emotional, those things that fill you up. So you know, like riding my motorcycle or playing golf or backpacking. Reading also fills me up. I love to read, but have some hobbies. Mm-hmm. And I've always had, I like to tell people I've had a life outside of the church. Mm-hmm. When I first became a pastor, a very wise man pulled me aside and said, every pastor has a mistress. I was shocked. He said, it's the church. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a life outside that. You can't let that eat you up.
So if you're a business leader, you have to have a life outside your business,
outside of your job. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If your whole life is your work and that's it, that is not a balanced and healthy life, and it will cost you in the end. It'll cost you along the way too.
Yes.
Yeah. So that having fun things that fill you up, that emotional fullness is important. So we talked about the spiritual, the physical, the emotional, the social, the mental. Mm-hmm. I think as we get older, it's easier to get set in our ways. Mm-hmm. And we miss out on a lot.
Yeah.
And I think stay curious, be a learner, be a lifelong learner. Read things that challenge your thinking, not just things that you agree with. You know, go to a website that's espousing something different than what you like, and learn that there are intelligent people who see the world differently than you do. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, that whole idea of mental growth, be a lifelong learner. I finished my master's degree when I was 60, and it was wonderful. It was a great experience, but keep reading, keep learning, keep growing. And then the last one is the personal side of it. And that's what I would describe as the character side, that all of us are works in progress. Mm-hmm. And part of being a disciple is being a lifelong learner and being in that lifelong process of change and transformation. And it's, again, goes back, all this stuff's interconnected, by the way. So this goes back to the social, that you have people that are willing to speak into your life. You know, a wife that says, honey, you need help.
Yeah.
You know, a friend that says, hey, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, those are really, really important. And part of that personal thing is the humility to be open and receptive to that kind of input in your life. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, if you don't have the input, or if you're too proud to take it, pride comes before a fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. So here's a question. Leadership is, it's always involves people, right?
Yes.
So that's the best part. Woo, people.
And the hardest part.
And the hardest part. Mm-hmm. So tell me about a time, or describe to me how when you're leading people and they don't want to go where you're leading, when you're leading people and they're frustrated, how do you help move people? Because it can be really easy to be moved by those people.
Yes.
To quit, to give up, to just throw up your hands and say, well, fine. So how did you, in a moment like that, how do you overcome that?
So there's, leadership has to be adaptive, meaning that you have to be able to lead in different ways with different people in different seasons. And so there are times when leadership requires the old Harry S. Truman, the buck stops here, right? I'm gonna have to make that call and it won't be popular. There are other times where the wisest thing to do is not have the buck stop at your desk, but be far more collaborative, you know, and work with a team of people that are gonna come to a consensus and agreement. So there, yeah, that's just two examples.
Right.
And you could find probably a dozen others in between those. So it's a difficult thing, particularly because we all have a preferred style of leadership, right? We all have a preferred way of doing things. And good leadership in the long run is being able to recognize my preferences, but being able to adapt to the situation that I'm in and the people that I'm with and understand what they need from me at this moment. So I've been in meetings where what the people in the room needed from me was they needed me to stand up and say, okay, we're going this way.
Yeah.
You know, there are other meetings, if I had done that, I would have had a rebellion on my hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just have to read the room and understand. But yeah, it is that's kind of the art of leadership, if you will, is if you're paying attention to the people you're leading and listening, then you know now's the time to collaborate. Now's the time to be that, you know, the voice crying in the wilderness, whatever is needed. Yeah.
Have you? Is it just like over time you develop that sense, like, or are there ways that you could develop that sense if you are a new leader or a young leader? How do you know when you should stand up and say it's now, or how do you know when you should sit back and let the group collaborate?
Yeah.
Or is it just an art, like you said?
It is an art, and you do get better with it with experience.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. So you find yourself in new situations, and you'll make mistakes, and you'll evaluate and say, oh, if I could go back and do that over again, I would have asked this question, or I would have steered us this way, or I would have proposed this, or I would have listened more. I'd say If I could go back and say something to my 25-year-old self,
yes, please.
You know, I would tell my 25-year-old self, don't be so sure of yourself. Be more curious, ask more questions, be a better listener, and underreact. Hmm. That whole cluster, if you will, or constellation of things that I was, as a young leader, when I first came here to Life Center, I just thought I was right all the time about everything.
You were mostly, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, that was, we all knew that. But yeah, and that sense of always being right and being stubborn about it and not listening, not being curious, not inviting, not soliciting other points of view, mm-hmm. you know, it created hardship for me and for other people.
Yeah.
And it also created tension in my marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, I was slow to the party figuring out that my wife, in her own quiet way, has access to a wisdom different than what I have. Mm-hmm. And it's when I finally figured that out and I got secure enough, my insecurity was I had to be right. And when I finally got over that and realized, oh, I'm not always going to be right, and that's okay, and it's okay, mm-hmm. then I was able to say, well, what do you think about this? I didn't go, oh, my word, I wish I'd listened to that 10 years ago.
Yeah. So you talked about making the mistakes in yeah. those situations where you yes. should have done this and you did this.
Yeah.
How do you recover from mistakes as a leader?
You own them. I mean, you have to own them and say, I'm sorry, folks. I made the best decision I could in that moment, and it wasn't a good decision. It wasn't mm-hmm. the right one. Yeah. I did a thing, you know, when we were in 2002, when we were trying to raise money to build the building here on Government Way. We hired a professional financial consultant, you know, money raiser mm-hmm. guy to, you know, and he helped us lay out this plan. Well, my own leadership instincts were shouting through the whole process. You know, there were just several things about it that I thought, oh, that is just not, like, for example, one of them was he wanted us to do a half year campaign.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a 7-week campaign.
Yeah.
You know, we compromised and did a 17-week campaign, which is, that's still, what, 4 months?
Long.
Yeah, way too long. Everyone was sick of it by the yeah. time we were done, you know? And I should have listened to my instincts there. But again, you know, yeah, we're paying him. He's the expert. And then he really didn't have built in a clear ask. Mm-hmm. And all that to say, you know, we did the Sunday where everyone's going to make their pledges and give, and the next Sunday is going to be Celebration Sunday, and we added everything up, and it's a $12.5 million project. We didn't even raise $1 million. Oof. Yeah. We didn't even raise enough to pay for the property, let alone build the building, yeah. you know? And, I went home so defeated. But when I came back the next weekend, I said, okay, this is supposed to be Celebration Sunday. Folks, there's not a lot to celebrate. Sorry. But I said, I'm not blaming you for that. I'm going to own that. Hmm. Because number one, I wore you out with a campaign that was way too long. And then number two, I didn't do a really clear ask. I didn't make it as crisp and as obvious as it should have been. And so we handed everybody a sheet of paper like this, you know, yep. just an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And we said, write your name, write your phone number, your contact info, and write down what you're going to give today or yeah. what you're going to pledge for the next 3 years. And everyone turned it in. It was a little over $3 million.
Yeah.
And away we went. We wow. did the project. But it started with me just getting up and saying, I botched this thing. I made a mess of it. Yeah. And that's on me. So I didn't have to blame them, chew them out. It was, I owned it.
Yeah. So 43 years of leading.
Yeah.
What are some key takeaways for you as you look back on the last 43 years and you go, this made a big difference? And I know we've talked about a lot of them already,
yeah.
but is there anything else where you go, man, this was really substantial for me to last 43 years?
Yeah. Well, I already mentioned good people around me.
Yeah.
That is huge. You know, it would be a travesty to give the impression that I just did all this on my own. I did not. And I mean, everything that happened at Life Center was a team effort. Mm-hmm. And I just had a great, great team, really, really blessed in that sense. And that great team, we loved and cared for each other. Again, we weren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but we were genuine in our care for each other. And that was huge. You know, and I already mentioned those six things that I paid attention to over the years. Friendships, so huge. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to that thing I just said too about what I would tell my younger self.
Yeah.
I think I could have saved myself a whole lot of pain if at the start I had understood the value of being humble, being teachable, being curious, being a little more open-handed about things rather than always having to be right and have my own way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have helped a ton.
Yeah. So if you could encourage leaders to read a couple books, which books would they be?
Oh boy. Wow. That's hard because I have
There's so many
good books. Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I'm going to start with the obvious. And I just would say, read your Bible every day. You know, that time with Jesus. And don't read it just to check it off, say, I read my Bible. Read it with an anticipation, with an expectancy that God's going to speak to you. Mm-hmm. You know, just this morning, reading my Bible, it felt like the Lord gave me something that was so good that I'd never really put together before. And I've read the Bible how many times? I mean,
yeah,
dozens, probably hundreds.
Yeah.
But so that'd be the first thing. I'd say don't skimp on that. Mm-hmm. Leadership books. I would recommend Pete Scazzaro's Emotionally Healthy Leadership.
Okay.
Terrific, terrific stuff there. Anything by John Stott. John Stott is, I'll say why. John Stott is brilliant. He's in heaven now, but he's brilliant. He's balanced. And what I mean by that is when he's handling a passage of scripture, he'll say, here's what this passage means in my opinion. Now, other people see it differently. And then he'll cite the person and how they see it. And he doesn't put up a straw man that he can knock down. He gives the other person's argument. Mm-hmm. I mean, respectfully, fully, you know, and then he'll say, now, I see it this way because of this, you know, so we're going to differ here on these things. But he does that consistently, and that is an awesome way for leaders. That's why I recommend his books. It's an awesome way for leaders to think and to approach different subjects, to say, yes, I have my opinion, and here's why, but I also understand that other people see it differently. Mm-hmm. And rather than poo-pooing their ideas, I can actually explain their ideas and then explain why I still land here.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that idea is being someone of integrity, someone who is balanced and can see both sides.
Yes.
And isn't caustic in the way that they communicate.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's a leader worth following.
Yes.
And so that's why you're recommending Stott's books, is because it gives an example of how to be that sort of leader.
There's a wonderful story about John Stott, and I won't get this letter perfect here, but he was invited to speak at the National Association of Religious Broadcasters here in America and was a keynote speaker for them. And the person who got up before him mocked and made fun of someone on the other side, someone that pretty much everyone in the room would have disagreed with and ridiculed that person. And when Stott got up, the first thing he did was he said, we should never ridicule our enemies. We should understand them. Hmm. And then went on to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just thought, and that's how he lived. And because of that, he was incredibly impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's really good. Mm-hmm. Thanks for a great conversation.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I'm taking away is self-care.
Yes.
As a leader, I've got to lead myself first.
Yes.
And if I'm not doing that well, then I'm going to crash and burn.
Yep.
I won't last. Another thing I'm taking away is I need friends who are going to be supportive, encouraging.
Yes.
Another thing I'm taking away is I need to have a life outside of my main pursuit.
Yes.
Whether that's work, family, I've got to have something beyond that to be balanced, that keeps me healthy emotionally, mentally. And so those are some really key takeaways that I not only take away from this conversation, but I've watched you lead, I've watched you live, and I see those things incredibly clearly. Mm-hmm. And those are things that I think anyone who's near you is gonna see. You love to have fun, you love to be with people, you take care of yourself, and those things have been really keys to your lasting leadership.
Yeah.
And so I wanna say thank you for your lasting leadership, thank you for the legacy you've created of So many people saying yes to Jesus, lives transformed. But you've just made people better. You've helped them follow Jesus. You've helped them grow in maturity. And so you're a great example me and to so many people. So may we be like you, be long-lasting leaders who take care of ourselves, who have fun, who have friends,
yes.
and who are healthy on the inside. So
that's good.
Friends, thank you so much for being here. I hope that you take something, that you try it, that you get feedback, and that you grow because of it. That's the Leadership Loop. Hope you put it into practice, and we will see you soon.